everybody out there in podcast land. You are listening to Unseen Footage. I am David Armstrong. With me, as always, is Claire Yale. How are you, Claire?
I'm good. A little sleepy, kind of.
Yeah, it is a Sunday night. You might be listening to this at any time, but we are recording this on a sleepy summer Sunday night in New York. It was a long weekend for us, but we are here to do episode 4. Are you excited to do episode 4,
I am, Claire? Excited to do episode 4.
Okay. All right, we talked a little bit before I started recording, and so I think this is going to be an interesting conversation. Our episode, of course, is Labyrinth, which is 1986's collaboration between Jim Henson of the Muppets. George Lucas was executive producer on this. He's known for Star Wars. I know.
What?
Yeah, you know. It's a little indie movie. I don't know if you know it, Claire.
Just Google it later.
Google it later. Look it up. Let's see. Who else? Terry Jones of the Monty Python Flying Circus. And he was the director and the writer of the movie. Or one of the writers, I should say. And David Bowie.
Right.
Yeah. Rock star David Bowie. Featured prominently in this movie, so it became a cult classic around when we were kids, when we were growing up. I grew up on The Muppets, on Fraggle Rock, on Sesame Street, so this was something that was right up my alley, things with puppets. I'd also seen Dark Crystal, which is a much weirder movie than this. But this is Labyrinth, which is pretty much a straightforward fairy tale, a discovery. I think Jennifer Connelly's character, she plays Sarah, the main character of the movie. It's kind of an Alice in Wonderland, Dorothy, like self-discovery sort of journey.
Yes.
Yeah.
In theory.
Okay. All right. The gauntlets have been thrown down. So here we go. So, Claire, what did you think of this movie? Let's start there.
I did not really like this movie.
That's fine. Totally valid.
And I knew going into it I wouldn't like it, and I was like kind of trying to keep an open mind about it, because I think I suggested this film.
I think so. I think I might have suggested Dark Crystal initially.
Oh, right.
And you said we could do Labyrinth, and I actually thought that might be better.
Yeah.
Dark Crystal, really weird.
And I've never even heard of Dark Crystal before.
Yeah.
It's not like, oh, you know, six of one, half a dozen of the other. Like, I've never even heard of Dark Crystal.
Yeah.
But Labyrinth, everyone's like, you haven't seen Labyrinth?
Sure.
But yeah, I just, like, I knew going into it I wouldn't like it because this just isn't my thing.
Okay.
In terms of, like, I don't like road trip movies. I don't like, I don't like Alice in Wonderland.
Okay.
You know, I don't like when it takes a long time to get somewhere and you actively, like, know we're trying to get to point B and there's all these different, you know, obstacles in our way.
Right.
I didn't like The Odyssey. You know, I don't like things like that. It's like a constant anxiety for me. Like,
okay.
I have dreams all the time of, like, not being able to get out the door. Like, we know we're going to Disneyland, but we can't get all the people in the car or whatever it is.
So it's the anxiety.
That's what it feels like.
Oh, okay, so it's the anxiety of the journey.
Yes.
Because I was going to ask if it's like, is it too easy of a storyline to tell? I don't know what, you know, I don't know what movie or play or whatever to write. I'm going to write a road trip because that's easy. There's inherent obstacles that can be faced in a journey movie from A to B. So I thought maybe it was the laziness of the storytelling or something.
I think it's, like, kind of the opposite in that it should be easy.
Right.
And, like, I've done a road trip, and I know that bad things happen, and it's, like, the impatience of it and waiting in it and, like, sitting in it. But it's also, like, you get there, you know, and you get there with with enough ease, usually, that, like, it's kind of where I don't see the difficulties as really like interesting enough, I guess.
Okay.
Usually in all of them. I don't like Wizard of Oz.
Okay.
I knew I wouldn't really be into it. And I also am not big into puppets.
Okay.
But that's not totally true because, like, when I watch this movie, the puppetry is really interesting.
Yes. I mean, that being said, like, even if you, I would say, like, even if you don't like puppets, and like I said, I practically was raised by right. puppets. I wanted to work on the Muppet Show. That was like, I wanted...
Did you really?
And when I was a kid, that was my dream. I was like, I can work on that show, right? Because you saw them running around. They were actors. Uh-huh. And Kermit was like the stage manager or everything. I was like, Kermit could be my boss, right? Is that a real thing?
That's so sweet.
I know. This is sweet little delusional seven-year-old David.
So maybe earnest. Not seven.
I know. So earnest. Right. So earnest. So there was that. I wanted to live in Fraggle Rock, which the trolls... Or the trolls. I always say trolls. They're goblins.
What is Fraggle Rock?
Fraggle Rock. So they're basically these little creatures, kind of... what I was going to say was they kind of look like the goblins from this movie.
Okay.
They're very similar in appearance and makeup, all that. They're very tiny. They live in a place. They're called Fraggles. They live in Fraggle Rock.
Uh-huh.
And they basically just play and work all day. And they just... Uh-huh. It's like learning to live in a society.
Right.
It was Sesame Street, but like... No humans. Like, humans was not a thing.
Got it.
So Sesame Street was, like, teaching.
Yeah.
And Fraggle Rock was just living.
Yeah.
So, there was that. So I learned on Sesame Street, lived in Fraggle Rock, worked at the Muppet Show. So that was my childhood. So, yeah, I love puppets. But I was gonna say, like, I feel like even if you don't... You have to admit, like, this is some of the best...
This is some
of the better puppetry work.
Absolutely. I don't think that I am necessarily drawn... That's how I should say it. I'm not drawn towards puppetry,
sure.
But when I see it, it's like that. I can appreciate how cool that is.
Right.
Like, I saw Lion King on Broadway, which is, like, all large-scale puppetry and phenomenal. You know, it's so cool.
Really sophisticated puppetry.
Yeah, and I feel the same way about this, that it's, like, I saw the pieces and saw, like, that's a cool... You know, so much craft and care has gone into everything.
Right.
So yeah, that I like.
Like the shaft of hands.
Yes.
Towards the beginning.
Yeah.
I thought, wow, I was actually explaining this to somebody today. I said, they know the podcast, so they were talking to me about, oh, you're talking about Labyrinth, and they grew up as a, like, it hit them, they're a little bit older than me, so it hit them a little bit better.
Yeah.
I watched a little bit after. So they were talking about how you couldn't do a movie like that. There's not enough patience to do a movie like this nowadays.
True. It's so true.
To see, there's just going to be it was a 2-minute segment at least of just hands making faces, you know?
That's so true.
That would have been done away with and it would have been something else and it would have been in CGI or something like that.
Exactly.
A lot of this movie would have been CGI.
Yeah, the door knockers, those two guys who one can't hear and one can't speak because they're the two door knockers.
Yep.
That would 100% be CGI.
Yeah.
Like, it wouldn't... And I saw this little bit about how they were talking about how they were created, and they're very simple, like, materials.
Oh, you watched, like, a behind-the-scenes
kind
of thing?
Yeah,
oh,
like
nice,
a little,
nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, I thought I'd get a little more perspective on it.
That's cool.
Before I shut it down.
That's good. That's like knowing your enemy before destroying them.
Yeah. From the inside out.
right. That's funny. I've never seen, like, a making of or anything like that of...
Yeah.
Labyrinth.
This one was particularly interesting, I think, because there's so much to be made.
Right.
And
everything is practical. There's almost none of it. They actually, on the Wikipedia page, the one thing I read was like that you can list the number of effects that are done post-production and are done by computer. Like, I can't remember the first one, but the other one is the weird music number that she has with the guys that are with their heads.
The orange
guys. You can tell because it's like it was done against like a black background and Jim Henson didn't like the way it looked. So George Lucas said, well, we'll try to re-edit it and composite it. And at the time it just didn't work out very well. It's composited pretty badly.
Right.
I will admit that. But they said the puppetry's so good that they didn't want to reshoot it.
Oh,
so,
wow.
And it is. It's a really fun segment, but it is, like, it's very oddly shot in this forest that you know they're not standing in.
Yeah, which I had that question. It's like, why? What was the purpose of that?
Right.
So I'm so glad you answered it without me even asking.
Right. There isn't really much, and I guess that will be that's, like, the next thing we could talk about, is the challenges that she faces within the labyrinth. So she has to go into this labyrinth. She's challenged by David Bowie, who is the king of the goblins.
Mm-hmm.
His name is Jareth.
which I thought his name was Jared.
like Jared from Subway?
Just like, yes. Yeah. Exactly. And I was like, the king of the goblins, like almighty king, is named Jared.
Right. Like, the fearful, like, master of fear. Right. Yes. Jared.
Yeah.
No, Jareth, yes. He takes Sarah's baby brother away into the center of the labyrinth and challenges Sarah to navigate the labyrinth successfully to get her brother back. And a lot of the challenges she faces along the way are basically doors.
Right.
and puppets that insist on singing for a little bit.
Yeah.
To stop her. Right. Nobody's really violent or like really trying to stop her.
Yeah.
So I wasn't sure, I guess, to your point, I wasn't sure what the stakes were of the movie.
There's no stakes.
There's
no stakes. I mean, to the movie's credit, it does all of the visuals so well, but I think it does it at the expense of a story.
Okay.
And that's my main reason I didn't like it, aside from the fact that I don't like journey movies.
Yes, yes.
Or puppets.
Right. This is puppets on a journey. Right. This is the worst. I don't know what the opposite of a wheelhouse is, but this is like not in
exactly.
it. This is the worst.
But yeah, I mean, there's no rules.
Yes.
There's no rules. And if you have no rules, you know, there are no stakes involved.
Right.
Everything is arbitrary. You know, like, at any point, the rules change. You already mentioned, like, the labyrinth changes.
Yeah.
It's like, why do I care about this?
Right. A labyrinth, to me, is already challenging. That's mm-hmm. a maze. I have my other story of, like, when I was, like, 7, I went to a fair, and there was, the funhouse.
Oh, yeah.
And I went through one of those clear mazes where the walls are like plexiglass or whatever. And I panicked.
That's terrifying.
In the middle of my dad had to go in and like rescue me. I was like in the middle of it somewhere.
Oh my God.
Because I just like, they could see me. They could see me like banging against the wall and like tears. So I'm not saying I'm an expert, but I understand the stress of a labyrinth.
Right. That is terrifying.
So it's already terrifying. So I didn't understand why Jareth himself, David Bowie's character himself, had to come in and change the labyrinth constantly.
Right.
I feel like it's already challenging enough.
Yeah, absolutely. What I didn't understand about Jareth's character, plenty, but I didn't, like, why does he want this baby so bad?
He wants a goblin baby.
But there's so many goblins.
But he hasn't turned a human into a goblin in a while. In a while. I mean, you can tell, because he's, like, the only human-looking goblin, which is weird.
Right.
Right?
Yep.
But it's because it's David Bowie.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I think I just took that as what it was.
when I was a kid and watching this movie, mm-hmm. did it scare you?
No.
Not at all?
No, actually. No, because I don't know. I don't know what it was, but I mean, I grew up on a lot of scarier movies. There's, I would say Neverending Story is a little more frightening.
Yeah,
for
that's
me.
Scary.
There's, like, the puppetry in that one is really good, too. But I feel like everything's just a little bit darker, a little bit scarier.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one that I always think of is Return to Oz, which is the sequel.
Oh, that one's really scary.
And that one's absolutely frightening. Like,
and
that should not be seen by children.
You know what? That's a really good point to where these movies are fairly comparable in like style theme, I guess, kind of, because she's still trying to get home. But I think the fact that it's humans,
mm-hmm.
more human antagonists,
yes,
than like these cute puppets.
Right.
But even like the creepy ones are like cute.
They're pretty cute.
Yeah.
I mean,
that might add like a level of creepiness.
I think that, yeah. And then maybe that makes sense to your point that you feel the stakes are kind of reduced because the enemies are not all that threatening.
Right.
They have a battle at the end, a quote-unquote battle, in the village,
uh-huh.
or whatever it is, and it's absolute chaos.
Right.
And I don't know what I thought when I was a kid, but I remember watching it today, I said, this is all to just shoot one girl. Like, why are they all running around this town like crazy?
Right.
they're going to hurt each other.
Yeah.
So I didn't understand that battle anymore. Yep. But I think, yeah, I think it's because they were not scary and not threatening. I think that might be why I enjoyed this movie.
Oh, yeah, as a kid.
It was fun. It was,
yeah. Yeah, it was
they
silly.
They sang.
Yeah, they do sing. And David Bowie sings.
Dance magic. He sings dance magic to all the goblins.
I don't know very much about David Bowie.
Yeah.
Are these David Bowie songs independent of Labyrinth that he brings in? Or
I believe he wrote them for Labyrinth.
Okay.
As far as I know.
Yeah.
I've always understood it as that. Maybe someone will correct me.
I am interested in whose baby this movie was. Like, who started the idea of Labyrinth? Was it David Bowie who brought it to Jim Henson? Or was it, like, Jim Henson Lucas who brought it to David Bowie?
It was Henson and another guy, Brian, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, Froud. Mm-hmm. He worked as an illustrator for a while, and he illustrated the concept art for this movie. Mm-hmm. Brought it to Jim Henson. They had done Dark Crystal, where they worked with puppets and things like that, and they wanted to do something more fully realized and also something lighter. So they had intended to make a movie that was lighter, a little more lighthearted, but still with a message.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it was more his baby, and I know, like, initially, I think Henson had made it heavier.
Yeah.
He was probably the one who was pushing for it to be darker, and then when David Bowie wanted to be part of it, David Bowie was the one who pushed for it to be more of a comedy and to perform and have those things. And Henson was like, all right, fine. Like,
right.
Let's push for some some dance segments and whatnot. Yeah.
Dance numbers with the goblins.
Right, right. And he performs all the songs in it. And yeah, so there's that.
So can we talk about...
Sure.
David Bowie as a character, Jareth.
Okay.
What are his motivations? What I don't understand is, like, does he love her? Or is he just, like the attention that she is now here? I don't understand their relationship. And I don't understand, I don't understand very much, but, wait, about this specific movie.
Yes, yes.
But, like, do they know each other before this instance? Because she knows the book, The Labyrinth.
Right, so she knows the Goblin King. That's something, actually, as a segue into this, that's something that bothers me about movie, like a narrative device, is that she was reading a book called The Labyrinth. It's a movie called The Labyrinth. I don't like that.
Yeah.
I don't like when
just
it's...
as devices.
As a device, I don't like that. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
But she... So she's reading the book. So she knows the character of the Goblin King, and I think it's established that... I think he's that world's devil.
Oh.
So it, you know, which makes sense because they're like, if she just wishes for this, then it'll happen. And
right.
He'll make it happen. And he's also the one offering her, like, oh, like, all of her dreams will come true and all this stuff. But there has to be a price that has to be paid, which is, like, that's kind of a satanic thing. You always make a deal with the devil. So... his deal was to take the baby.
Got it.
And I don't think... I think it's the motivation of... That he is a superior, like, bargaining person. Like, he can manipulate these people into doing what he wants. I don't think his goal is to get what he ultimately gets.
Right.
Like, I don't think it matters that he has a baby.
Right.
I think it's just the fact that he got the baby. It's the getting. It's the journey.
It's the journey, not the destination.
Right.
I did not even think about the fact that he might be like a satanic character.
Yeah. I think that's kind of the...
that makes sense.
Yeah, it's kind of the thought, I feel like, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, like an evil king, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, he's like the evil of the world.
But she doesn't, like, hate him.
No. No, and in fact, there's the ballroom scene.
Super
where
weird.
I think she almost falls in love with him.
Right. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I think, but that's the thing too, is like, he kind of is into her. And he's
yes.
kind of into her the whole time, sort of, but then he doesn't want her to get to the castle.
Right.
It just feels like this big, like, cat and mouse kind of game the whole time, where it's like, I want attention from her, but I don't want her to get here yet.
Right.
You know, like,
right.
I'm just going to keep getting in her way and just poke at her. Because when you have crushes on people, you poke at them.
You poke at them. You poke at them.
Just in their direction.
In their direction. You don't touch them.
Right.
There's no contact.
No.
Just at them.
Just at them.
Right.
Toward them.
Toward them. Yeah, I guess it is.
She's 14? What? Like?
Yeah, she's... Connelly in real life at that point was 15.
Okay.
So the character couldn't have been... Had to have been 15 or 16.
Right.
But I think it is... That's why I compare it to Alice in Wonderland, Wizard of Oz, because it is also a female protagonist coming of age.
Right.
The...
Wait, but she doesn't come anywhere. Like, she doesn't go... Like, there's no journey, like... There's no hero... I don't know what she's realized at the end.
She remembers what's important.
What?
She remembers that she's rescuing her brother, and then she does.
Uh-huh.
And then she remembers the line from the beginning.
Yeah, but
you
that's
have
it?
You have no power over me.
Yes, but A... We can talk about that because that's so religious, and I can't believe I didn't even see that. Like, thinking it was having you say that to me after telling me that he's a satanic character,
right?
Is like, that's so biblical.
Yeah,
but I didn't even think about that. B.
It's also a strong, independent woman telling a man who has been manipulating her.
Right.
manipulating her through custody of a child.
Right. Oh my gosh.
Oh my god.
What a domestic tale.
I know. It works on so many levels.
But that's the thing, too, that is so annoying. And I'm glad that this wasn't a dream. Because halfway through, I was like, this is going to be a dream. And it's all negated.
Right.
But it kind of does the same thing with the fact that all she had to do was remember what she already knew. Kind of, like, negates her whole journey.
Sure.
Like, it's just like, I just forgot to tell you that at the beginning.
Right.
Like, if you had remembered that an hour and a half ago, we wouldn't have seen this whole trip.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, that happens, too, in, like, Wizard of Oz. Like, why didn't you just tell... Glinda could have told Dorothy at the beginning of the story.
Right.
Click your heels together and you'll go home. But, I don't know.
Yeah. That's a...
So I don't know.
Why?
I guess I think they're trying what it's trying to do is that the moral of the story, and it's something that is in a lot of kids' stories, it's the power of whatever is already inside of you. You've had it all along. And it's not remembering, but it's like you have to realize that on your own. So you have to go through something that forces that out of you.
Right.
And I think it has to be painted a little more broadly for a younger audience sometimes.
Do you think when you watched this as a kid, you walked away like, there's the power inside of myself. I just need to go through a journey to remember.
Well, I did cry in a labyrinth, so I don't know if I learned the lesson.
In that situation, the power was with your father.
Right, right. My father was basically Hoggle. I had to come in and like save me.
Which, by the way, I love that she calls him Hogwart.
Yeah, Hogwart, like, right? What a call forward.
Yeah. Who knew?
Who knew? That's where
maybe
is that
J.K.
where she
Rowling.
Got it from? Who knows?
I wonder.
Who even knows?
Who knows?
We'll never know. But yeah, there's that.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Do you think, well, I guess the question would be then, and this is like really like deconstructing, overthinking a movie perhaps now, but what do you think that her character within the boundaries of the story, I guess, could she have learned that on her own? Is that something, without going through everything she went through, could she have just suddenly been like, oh, that's all I have to do? Like, knowing how she was at the beginning of the story, all that stuff, could she have arrived at that without going through the labyrinth?
I think that had this character at the beginning of the movie let her dad into her room and had a nice sit-down chat that he wanted to have, probably could have avoided this whole film. But I also... I guess.
Do you think the dad was going to have a legitimate conversation with her?
I don't know.
Because that's the other thing, too.
I would think so.
I don't know.
I don't know. This is the thing with this movie for me. This is like my thesis statement.
Okay.
Is that the visuals are awesome.
Yes.
The production value is amazing.
Yeah.
And there's been so much attention to all of that detail.
Yeah.
That they just lose the story underneath it. I think I already said that.
That's fine.
That's the thing is that, like, I don't know what her motivation is. I don't know, like, I don't see a character arc with her.
Mm-hmm.
I just think, like, she figures it out and then... Everything is very unspecific in terms of character and plot and dialogue and all of that. Like, she literally says the sentence, I wrote it down, at the end of the movie when Hogwart, what's his name?
Hogwart.
Which is such a fun, that's one of my favorite bits in anything, is like when someone constantly can't remember their name and they're always calling him something different.
So you loved Finding Nemo?
Love Finding Nemo. Talk about some character development and story.
That's a journey movie.
Oh, that is a journey movie.
Yeah, that's a journey movie.
That
like.
Is specific. That's an exception in my book.
Okay.
I don't know why. I can't really say specifically why. The storytelling's great in that movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe that's it.
Yeah.
I think it's the power of the storytelling.
And I wonder if there's something specific about having like this young girl who doesn't know what she's doing be part of what I don't like about it. Because Finding Nemo is an older guy. He's also a fish.
Right. Yes, he's an older fish.
I don't know.
It's a dad.
I'm just kind of putting that out there. Yeah, I think
it's a dad searching for a son.
Yeah. It's a really specific and very strong need.
Yes.
Anyway.
A sibling going for a sibling is like a level down.
Well, she's also like willed this to happen.
Yes.
She did it on purpose.
She's basically fixing her own mistake.
Right. Which she doesn't ever acknowledge either.
That's true.
Like, I wish she'd just been like, I accidentally did this. I mean, she is like, I need to get him back, but...
Right. But that's different from being... Yeah.
Right.
I made a mistake.
So she says this. This is one of her last lines when she meets Hoggle.
Hoggle
in her room. She's like, I do need you, Hoggle. And she says, I don't know why, but every once in a while in my life, I need all of you.
The dead look that Claire is giving me right now speaks volumes. Yeah, I...
You're the writer. You know why. Like, if you don't know why, make up a reason why.
Right, yeah. I see what you're saying. I think... I don't know. I think it's still... Again, it's a coming of age... What it's supposed to be,
right.
And I think what its intention is a coming of age story. It's this girl who is towing the line between being a child and then also taking adult responsibility.
Right.
Even if she's not admitting to it, she's owning up to a mistake that she made, which
That's
is
true.
Not something that children do.
That's
it's
true.
Something that an adult would do.
Yeah.
But she still has childlike logic to a lot of things. I mean, you see it in the first scene where when she first meets David Bowie, Jareth, can't call him David Bowie the whole time, but Jareth is like, do you want all this stuff? Because then you have to forget about the baby. And she's just like, I can't.
Right.
And she doesn't give any sort of reason. It's just, I can't.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like him back.
Right.
And then so I don't know why I need you because I'm a kid and I have no reference for what I'm going to need you for one day.
And I have bad parenting.
Parents are... I think if there's anything we've learned from this podcast so far, it's that parents in children's movies are pretty terrible.
They're so bad.
Even if they're Robin Williams as Peter Pan.
Yes.
They're terrible
they're
parents. Yeah. But yeah, so she's... But she hasn't really either, I guess. I feel like her parents were very... attentive. She was the one being irresponsible.
Yeah, that's true.
She's an hour late.
That's true. An hour late is late.
Yeah.
And before cell phones, it's kind of like scary.
An hour late in an era of no cell phones. She had to look at the clock tower in town.
To know,
oh, it's 7.
One more hour, they have to call the police.
Right. Oh, yeah, exactly. And even then, I'm sure the cop still has that line of, well, we have to wait at least 6 hours or whatever, right? That's
like
always a movie thing.
Yep.
I feel like that doesn't really happen in real life.
It's Phil Collins.
It's Phil Collins. Your daughter's missing. Still nailed it. Still nailed it. Did you have another thing Did you like, how about all the characters then? How about all the support characters? Hoggle. You got Hoggle.
Hoggle.
You got Ludo.
Yep. Hoggle, I feel, also is like, has no redeeming qualities as a friend, quote unquote, or like as a sidekick or anything. I don't know why she continually trusts him.
Yes.
And he calls her out, which I do like. She's like, why should I trust you? And he's like, well, you have no other choice. But like that continues.
Right.
And there's no real...
That's true. And there's a continued... There's continuation of not being able to trust him.
Right.
He drugs her.
Yeah.
Willingly.
Yep.
I thought he was going to throw it away in the... in the swamp, and then David Bowie's voice came out of nowhere.
Yeah. I do like that there's kind of this struggle with, like, because tell me if you felt like this. As a young girl, when I was like 5 or 6,
okay,
but when you liked a boy but didn't really know, okay, it's like you know that person's special, but you don't necessarily know what that means yet. And I feel like that's what this guy was going through, Hoggle. Where, like, when I used to have crushes on boys, I would simultaneously want to be married to them and also have them be my brother. But just because I didn't understand,
right,
like, what either of those things meant.
Right.
Because I only have sisters.
Right.
So I wanted someone to be special to me, so I would, like, couldn't decide if I wanted to be married to them or if I wanted them to just be, like, my best friend.
Right.
And I feel like that's the struggle that he's going through, where, like, this is the first girl he's ever met. There's no other girls.
Yes.
In this whole land.
Literally.
Yeah, the whole thing. There's no goblin girls.
Yeah.
And, like, he's really, like, this person, I feel something, I want to be special to this person, but I don't know how.
Right, right.
That's kind of cool.
Okay.
I could
see
that.
I could appreciate that. And I think that's why they are allowed to have that complicated of a relationship.
Right.
And she doesn't she shouldn't really trust him for all intents and purposes, but
right,
she does. I don't know why. I guess I get, by your explanation, I get why Hoggle, like, tries to stay in her life.
Right.
I don't know why she continues to trust him.
No, yeah, me neither.
Which is very strange.
Yeah. Aside from, like, oh, you're a cute little sidekick.
Right.
But this is, in theory, this is a really serious situation.
Right.
So I don't have time for cute little sidekicks if you're not going to help me.
Right.
Yeah.
So we had, I guess it, like, evens it out because you have to, when in the, like, once it becomes, like, group thing, like, she's always very brave and she's always, like, moving forward, and he by rules of character, like, he has to be the coward and he
right,
has to be the untrustworthy one.
Yes, exactly.
And all that.
Yeah.
And then I feel like he redeems himself by the end.
Yeah.
Would you say it evens out that
she needs him, but she doesn't know why.
Right. Right. And you had Ludo.
Ludo.
Ludo, the big the big guy.
Yeah. Ludo, when I saw him for the first time, I was thinking, like, that's such creative puppetry.
Yeah.
You know, like, just this huge monster being.
And it looked like, I mean, the way he moved was, like, really cool. He'd bend over, mm-hmm, and then, like, it looked like he, I don't know, like, I feel like the top half and the bottom half of his puppet was, like, detached somehow, because it, like...
Hmm.
It looked like he was like taking, like, the guy would take it off and then, like, lower it and then, like, put it back on.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. It looked like he moved in such a unique way.
Yeah.
That I was like, huh. And Ludo had the power to call rocks.
The ever specific power of calling rocks.
Right. Right. Not just any sort of earth thing.
Right.
Usually it's, like, plants.
Right.
If anything.
Yeah.
If anything, somebody would have control over plants.
Right.
But I guess because he's...
Which is logical, because plants are alive.
Right. Yes.
So, like, the idea of, like, being able to control them makes sense.
Right. But these rocks... these rocks were alive. These rocks were alive.
Yeah.
And then... But... like, that's like that in the battle when he calls the rocks into the battle. I saw, like, some of them are rolling and then some of them are just gliding.
Yeah.
So I was like, those ones are being pulled on a string. Like,
that's how they do this.
Yes, yeah. That was the only, like, cheapened moment for
yeah,
me, like, rewatching it
uh-huh,
again. Because I haven't. This is not something that I loved this movie when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
I have this is one of the ones that I have not watched since I was a kid. Like, yeah. I've watched Clueless, I've watched Hook since then, but like this one.
Yeah.
Today was a pleasant journey back into the labyrinth for me. Yeah.
I love that other little guy, the little fox man.
Didymus.
Didymus.
Yeah.
When did they say his name?
Several times. Sir Didymus. He is a knight of some table.
Right.
And his horse is a dog.
Yeah.
Dog. Yeah. I thought it was the same dog. Was it the same dog?
Yes, it's totally the same dog.
Because she has no reaction to it.
No, she doesn't recognize that it's the same breed of animal.
Right.
At all.
Ambrosius.
And oh, yeah, he's great. He's very great. Monty Python-y.
Yes. Yeah. You can see a lot of the Monty Python influence, I feel like.
Yeah.
I feel like if you knew Monty Python, I guess that was the other thing, too, is like it's such an intersection of all the things that I loved. It was like George Lucas with Star Wars and Jim Henson and then Terry Jones. It was everything I loved. And a lot of the wit and stuff, I feel like, is Jones's influence on the script.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think the fact too that it had so many writers, a lot of people had a pass at it. I was reading about how many different treatments the screenplay had and how many different writers got a pass at it and all this stuff, and I feel like that might have been some of the problem with losing some of the story,
right.
Is that all of these elements came at maybe the wrong time or whatever.
Right. I'm surprised that there was a screenplay. Like, I feel like they just sat in a circle and they were like, what's a nightmare you've had? What's a nightmare you've had?
Yeah.
Let's just line these up and have her go through them.
Right. A shaft of hands.
Right.
I meet a tiny bookworm.
Yes.
I was sad that bookworm never came back. The little...
I know.
I don't remember his name. I never remember the name.
Yeah, he's really good.
Yeah. But then and then he calls it out. He calls out your story thing, too. Because he's like, no, don't go that way. And then so she goes the other way, and he goes, huh, she shouldn't have gone that way. She would have been at the castle. Like, what?
Right. I thought that would be, like, a running joke throughout. I thought she'd meet these characters who were like, oh, you should have just gone right there. Look, there's the castle.
Every time she had to, like, meet somebody at doors, I was like, oh, she's gonna have to... And then after she leaves, they'll be like, she should have gone the other way.
Yeah, exactly.
No.
But they didn't.
No, of course not.
No.
They forgot. They were going to, but they forgot.
So this is a fantasy film.
Yes.
And my question about fantasy is, what constitutes technically a fantasy film? Is it anything that's, like, otherworldly, that's not, like, in space?
Yeah. I think it's... Yeah. Yes. It's, like, fantastical elements.
Right.
I guess there's certain characters that you have to have, and that's, like, there's usually a rescue involved, or... going on a journey. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of fantasies are journey based.
Yeah.
And I was gonna say that there's usually some sort of moral to be learned, but I don't know if that's necessarily true all the time, or maybe it's not as obvious sometimes.
Yeah.
But I feel like that's part of it. Mm-hmm. Fantasy is usually moralistic in some way.
Right. Some kind of allegory or something.
Right. My tough part with fantasy, with any fantasy, is that the rules have to be clearly established for what the rules of the fantasy world are.
Right.
And if there's certain things that are introduced, how do they get justified against certain things? So, like, for instance, like, we were joking about it, but Ludo's ability to call rocks, like, part of the labyrinth is made of rocks, so why is he unable to manipulate the labyrinth?
Oh, right.
So I wasn't sure about that. It's little things like that.
Right.
And, I don't know.
Because I love two of the things, like, movies that I will watch over and over, stories I will read over and over, are Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
Both fantasy. And I love them.
Right.
Like, those will go with me to my grave.
Yeah. Also, Lord of the Rings is a journey.
I know. I thought about that when you said most fantasies are journeys. I was like, oh, Lord of the Rings is a journey.
Yeah.
And I just suggested I hate them. But it's also an exception.
Yeah. Because I guess
it's more...
one section of the Fellowship is going on a journey.
Right.
And everybody else is
chasing
them.
And to be fair, those are my least favorite of the whole
That's true.
Story.
Yeah.
The rest of it's a war movie.
Yeah, that's true. Yes. Yes.
Not the rest of it, but
the whole time. It's just terrible, terrible war.
I only watch Helm's Deep, so that's why I think that. I just rewind back to the beginning of Helm's Deep and watch it again.
Yep.
My entire experience with Lord of the Rings
is just Helm's Deep. Battle. Right, yeah. It's just Legolas sliding down the stairs on a shield.
Yes,
she exactly. didn't have to do, but we're all glad he did.
Yes.
We're all glad he did. So yeah, so then there... So Didymus is the dog. Did you notice the dog switching back and forth between a real dog and a puppet dog?
Yeah.
Some of the cuts were really bad.
Yeah.
There's when they're fighting the giant robot, when Hoggle comes back and saves them. Just before that, he swings an axe, and Didymus and the dog fall over.
Yeah.
And it's obviously a puppet dog. Just a second before, like, it's like the far shot is a real dog, and then it cuts in, and the dog's like, and the like, it's like very stiff arms, and like the face is like frozen open,
right.
And you're like, puppet dog, it's a puppet,
yeah.
But it's again, like, somebody's puppeteering a dog and another puppet on top of that puppet,
I mean, there's like five people working on each of these characters, it's insane,
yeah. It's a team. I went to like a real cast page of it, and it showed the breakdown of all the puppeteers.
Yeah.
And it's like four or five to a puppet.
Yeah.
Hoggle is like one of the most complicated. There's somebody inside it, and then there's somebody remote controlling the face.
Oh, wow.
Because they wanted it to somehow, I guess, like to be more expressive, they had to control it externally.
Mm-hmm.
So the person inside it is not even controlling the face.
Yeah.
And then the voice is coming from somebody else entirely as well.
Right.
So.
Wow.
Complicated.
Yeah.
Complicated stuff.
One of the most interesting parts of this movie, I think, is when the ending, before she gets to the baby, the climax, when they're on all those different staircases.
On the Escher staircase.
Yes.
The M.C. Escher painting.
Yeah. And she has that painting in her room.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Yeah. And then she's like in it.
Right. Okay.
She's a creepy girl. I think we've already established
she's
that.
She has a weird room.
Yeah.
She has a weird room.
Weird interests.
Yeah.
But I guess you're right. It's like this mixture of like child and becoming a woman.
Right.
And like how those kinds of interests interact.
Because she puts those things away at the end.
Right. Yeah. I guess that's symbolic.
Lesson learned. I don't know.
Nailed it.
Nailed it. Nailed it? Question mark?
Yeah. But I love that part because I thought that there was like this weird romantic thing going on with Bowie and this 14-year-old.
Yeah.
And
there was.
And there is.
There's the ballroom scene.
Yeah.
There's the ballroom scene. And then the song at the end in that scene that you're talking about, the painting, it's like a weird like seduction scene. Like, you can feel me with you. And like he passes through her like a ghost.
Yeah.
I didn't understand it.
Yeah, me neither.
Yeah.
But that... I wish the movie was more about that relationship, as creepy as it is.
Right.
Because that's at least, like, a compelling human to, like, whatever god.
Yeah.
Not god but king.
Right.
But it's at least, like, a kind of human emotion we can attach to.
Yes. And I will say, like, I guess one of the one solid fun fact I know is that in one of the original treatments of the script, there was some sort of scene or a line or something where David Bowie's character says, more than wanting a goblin baby, I would much prefer a human queen.
Oh,
so
that's interesting.
So then that would have gone along with the story you thought
would
be a little more compelling.
Yeah.
Is that he's trying to seduce her into becoming the queen.
Right.
Which is an underworld story. That's Hades tries to bring Persephone to the underworld.
Yeah.
If I remember my Greek correctly.
How big is their age difference?
Hades and Persephone?
Yeah.
Well, Hades is an immortal, so it's like 1,000 something.
Pretty big.
It's pretty wide. It's pretty vast.
Yeah.
Did you have any lightning moments?
Ah, lightning moments. Yeah, I have one.
Okay.
Who hates babies? She hates this baby.
She hates
like,
that
she
baby.
She gives it no time to be like an adorable baby.
No, no. And that was actually one of the most upsetting moments to me is the, she's telling the story at the beginning.
Yeah.
She's like, once upon a time, there was a baby who was an idiot or whatever she yeah. says. Yeah. And like, the baby's crying. Yeah. It's like so traumatic for me watching it. I was like, I don't want to watch this yeah. scene anymore.
Yeah. That baby's still developing. It's yeah. cognitive.
Right. And the baby is a baby.
Yeah. It's doing literally nothing
yeah.
but being a baby. I don't know. We talked about the CGI red birds thing. That was like, why would you even make that so obviously like...
It's so bad.
It's like they cut around them yeah. and paste them.
That the, her hair moved so badly in that scene because it's like moving in and out of the edit yes. of the composite. So yeah. it's so bad.
Yeah.
But yeah, I had, actually, the reason I was reminded was because I had a lightning uh-huh. WTF moment. When they first finally get to the castle and, like, they beat the robot.
Yeah.
And they, the big heavy doors, and, like, she can't open them, so Ludo pushes them open. They all push them open together. There's two milk bottles sitting outside the door.
What?
Yeah. I had to rewind it. You go back to that moment, and there's just two milk bottles. So, like, there's a milkman in the goblin labyrinth who, like, delivers milk. And also, not a lot of milk, but there seems to... It seems like all the goblins live in this castle.
Right.
With the king.
Yeah.
But just two bottles.
Right.
Because they probably don't like milk that much.
No, no.
But yeah, I saw that, and I was like,
wait! They just need, like, droplets for their eyes.
Right. I saw
that's
that.
So weird.
And I was like, I have to bring that up.
One person has a specific job here.
Right.
And it's that guy.
Right.
And that's it. I have another one that I thought of.
Yeah.
Why does the hero always have to go in alone at the end? She has no specific reason, but she's like, you guys stay here.
She also...
You've been really helpful thus
she
far.
She also doesn't have a reason for that either.
Yeah.
She's like, that's just the way it is. Yeah. And to save it, the writing is, Didymus immediately is like, well, if that's the way it is, then that's the way it shall be. Right. And he's like, let's go. Like, he's so gung-ho about leaving yeah. her.
That's what, I just feel like Jim Henson, to his wonderful credit,
yes.
like this wonderful mind.
Right.
I feel like he is such an earnest guy and he like loves what he does so much.
Yeah.
But I feel like he like sat down to write this. I know he didn't write
right.
it, but I feel like he sat down to write it and is like, oh, this is a thing that happens. Why? I don't know.
Right.
Let's
right.
do it anyway.
Right. I'll figure it out. Somebody right. else will figure it out.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't even have to be Jim Henson. It could just be someone else who like is like childlike and like
yeah.
imaginative, but doesn't have like real solid reasons or motivations
yeah.
for anything.
Yeah. There's some movies like that where I feel like they meant to come back to it
mm-hmm.
and be like, insert reason here,
right.
insert something here, and then they just forgot and
right.
they're like, oh, I don't know what to, yeah, just don't worry about it.
Cut it
don't
together.
It. Just cut it together.
yeah.
Just cut really fast to
yeah.
something. Why do you have to go alone? Cut.
yeah.
You're like, go to something else. Yeah.
yeah.
Oh, I had one more. There was just one little moment that I really enjoyed. In the dance magic song, they, like, cut out to the crowd of goblins,
uh-huh.
and there's one goblin, like, in the back, and he's standing with his back to the camera, basically, and he's, like, standing in the window, and he's catching a bird with a net.
Oh, I saw that.
And I was like, that's his one job.
Right.
Bird catcher.
Yes.
Don't let birds land on my windowsill.
We're gonna catch and release, but I don't want it right here.
Right, right. But, like, somebody had to be puppeteering that bird
right.
to be caught.
Yeah.
Ugh, just insane.
Yeah.
I think that, like, that also, this time, is what kept my attention.
Uh-huh.
Is, like, I think because of the lack of any sort of story or whatever, I just kept thinking about the technical mastery that had to go behind every little
yeah.
moment. Because everything, again, is, I know I mentioned it already, but everything is practical. So
right.
none of that, like, even if we had to have, they made the dog do something, it was like, that was a puppet.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Or any, you know, all those things.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So that's Labyrinth.
That's Labyrinth.
That's Labyrinth.
There it is.
It is a crazy, it's a crazy trip.
It's sort of scary. Like, I was kind of scared.
You're scared?
At moments, yeah. I would definitely be scared of this as a kid.
I could see that. I could see how it's upsetting.
Yeah.
I wasn't scared of many things
yeah.
when I was a kid. I enjoyed a lot of those movies. I think Return to Oz is the closest.
That's a really that scary I would get movie.
To it.
Mm-hmm. That gets she, into really dark themes, though.
Yeah.
We can talk about that some other time.
She has seven heads.
Yeah. And she's, in the real life, she's in an insane asylum.
Oh, God, yeah.
She's really creepy.
Yeah, let's not.
I'm going to have nightmares about that.
Let's not. Why don't you have a... You can have a good dream about... How about you have just have a good dream about David Bowie seducing you?
Right, yeah. Ooh, best of dreams.
Best. As I just said, love, deep in your eyes, it kind of paled you. Open and closed within your eyes, I'll place the sky within your eyes.
That's Labyrinth.
So that's Labyrinth. And, yeah. So any final thoughts, Claire?
I mean, just if you want to watch it while you're vacuuming or something... That would be my suggestion.
That means might as well watch it with the sound off.
Yeah. Watch it for the puppetry if you're going to watch it.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, it is great puppetry. And, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, for what it's worth, I think Jennifer Connelly is great. I think she's great,
but she's fine.
For what she's given.
Yeah.
And then it's always fun to see David Bowie.
Yeah.
He's always fun.
I still don't understand how they got him on board. I don't understand.
It had to have been because he gets to perform like 3 or 4 songs in it.
Right.
He got to do all the music.
Yeah.
So that's it.
Yeah. Well,
so there you go. That's Labyrinth. That. Yeah. So Claire didn't like it.
Oh, do you have any final thoughts, David?
Labyrinth is I think of the three we mentioned, of those kind of young girl goes on a journey. Labyrinth, Alice in Wonderland, Wizard of Oz. For me, this one's the more interesting of them. I haven't seen Alice in Wonderland in a long time. I never really liked it. I usually put it on to fall asleep.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, and Wizard of Oz, it's Wizard of Oz. It is what it is.
Yeah.
It's a fine musical. Right. But that's about it.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
There you go.
Of the three whatever movies that we just mentioned.
The three of the genre that Claire hates the most. Girl goes on a road journey.
They say.
Oh, boy. All right. Anyway.
Okay.
So that's Unseen Footage. Thanks for joining us for Labyrinth. I'm David Armstrong, and she's Claire Yale. Claire, say goodbye.
Goodbye, people.
Bye. Magic dance.